Blog Talk Radio.
Welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, February 18th, 2011. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research, and I'm the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Please visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding powerful crystalline water. Our bodies are 70% water. What kind of water are you putting in your body? Filtration is only the first step. Learn about crystalline therapeutic-grade water at waternurtureslife.com. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research, and we'll be here actually just one more Friday, which is next Friday will be our last week for a little while. Carla will be out for a few weeks recovering from surgery, but we will be here today and one more week after that. Carla, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Monica. Thanks a lot. Although I must say that driving home in traffic and getting stuck in three separate traffic jams on a pretty clear day was kind of unusual. It took us over 2 hours to make about a 25-minute drive. It was a Yeah, it was such a surprise. You know, you don't expect these things unless it's bad weather. We're having this spell of absolutely superlative weather, and it's sunshiny and warm, and everybody's, you know, out without their coats on and feeling liberated, finally, from winter. And there was just one mess after another. It was amazing. I was just really, really glad to get home. Must have been 100,000 people involved in the slowdown. It was citywide. There was no way to get home. We tried three separate roads, and there were accidents on all of them. It was just amazing. Other than that,
oh, dear.
Fine. I do want to thank the people on the forum that have begun a prayer thread for my surgery. It's a fairly major operation. They open the spine and stabilize the spine and then fuse whatever part of the spine they're working on, which for me is in the lumbar region, the lower region. They're trying to stabilize the part down by my hips and legs so that I can keep walking. I don't know what's happened to my spine, but 67 years, I guess, will kind of have some wear and tear involved, and they're just stabilizing me for the rest of the incarnation. So it's going to be a whopper, so I understand it, and it'll take some time to get over. And I just want to tell everybody how much I appreciate the prayers, because I know that there are so many people that are offering prayers and Reiki sessions, absent healing of various kinds, and let me tell you, it works. Monica, you wouldn't believe how fast my scar healed the last time I was in surgery, which was last March, not quite a year. And the surgeon was absolutely amazed. He had never seen anybody heal like I healed, and I knew that it was me and the angels, and Reiki healings. And thank you for all the prayers, and thank you for all the energy and the they really guarantee you that, and I am totally and very much want to get on with things. I will not.
Well,
you know, I will take my time and get well over it, but I'd like to be back on the air as soon as possible.
Well, we will definitely be showering you with prayers. They will be just coming to you like crazy, for sure. Carla, I'm going to open tonight's show with a quote from Ra from session 420. The question is, can you state the law of one to me? Ra, I am Ra. The law of one, though beyond the limitations of name, as you call vibratory sound complexes, may be approximated by stating that all things are one, that there is no polarity, no right or wrong, no disharmony, but only identity. All is one, and that one is love light, light love, the infinite creator.
Thank you, Monica. Those are some of my favorite words from the Law of One sessions. This one in particular was from session 4, question 20, according to the work of the man who put up www.lawofone.info. If you go there, you can find the whole bulk of the Law of One sessions, every word. He's listened a second time to the original tape recordings to make sure that every word is down right. And he's got everything down, even all the ers and the uhs, just to make sure that he's got everything. And he's the one that numbered the sessions and then numbered the questions within the sessions. So it makes it a lot easier to identify where we are in the books. But I love this quote because it hammers home that all is one. And it does it by saying not only that all is one, but that there is no polarity, no right and wrong, no disharmony, only identity. Now, in third density, that's simply not true. There is polarity. This is the density of polarity. They're from sixth density, and they're from the density of unity, and they have earned the right to say there is no polarity because they have moved to the point where they include both polarities in their thinking processes, and it comes out positive. I don't know how it happens. It's going to take me a few densities to learn that. But for those of Ra, this is the way things are. Of course, there's right and wrong in this density. If we didn't know right from wrong, we'd be in a terrible muddle. If we didn't all drive down the right side of the street, when some of us took their part out of the middle and some drove on the left and some drove, well, we just never get anywhere. So obviously, there is right and wrong at that level, fundamental level of human courtesy and protocol so that everybody can get along and do their thing. Of course, there's disharmony in third density. There's disharmony all the time. There's disharmony every time we rub up against each other and it doesn't suit us both. We are in a state from morning until night where we're very vulnerable to being thrown off of our balance and feeling disharmonious. So we know for sure that we're not in the middle of sixth density because this is a place where there is polarity, there is right and wrong, there is disharmony, and it's very difficult to say that there is identity in third density. And yet, the overarching picture, the picture that the Law of One asks us again and again to look at, is that there truly is only identity. I am one with everything I see. I am one with everybody I see. I am one with nature. I am one with myself. And that is an identity. And the identity is through the Creator. It's not person to person. It's namaste. It's the Creator in me salutes the Creator in you. There is where the identity is. The Creator in me is the identity with the Creator in everybody else. And if we can remember that when we are talking to somebody else, we're talking to the Creator. It will really help us with that identity. Because if we can keep it in mind, then we can be agents of love and light in this world. I certainly hope I am. And I think all of us can be voices of love and voices of light. As the mood takes us, as inspiration takes us, and as our internal tuning shines out through our eyes, we don't have to say a thing. Yet still, the silence is a voice of love. So, I do want to thank you to everybody for listening. And we've discovered that a lot of people are listening in on the archives, and I'm so glad for that. Don't lose the habit. We'll be back. But thank you, everybody, for responding well to the show. And be sure and send in those questions, because then Monica will have a lot of ammunition to fire at me, things, interesting things to consider when I start getting out. Okay, Monica.
Okay. As a follow-up to what you just said, if I remember correctly, in the Law of One, it states that in 6D, the STO and STS paths are balanced. Can you comment on what the mechanism is that brings about that balance? Do you know anything about that?
Well, just what I've read in the readings, or channeled and then read. When I channel, I'm not really in reading mode. I don't know what I'm saying. But when I read it, the idea that I get is that basically there is an irresistible urge that we have to evolve. We want to grow. We want to become. And that is a pressure that is, I think, sacred and is inevitable and is part of the way creation works. We are always striving to move ahead, even though we're actually moving in a circle. From the source to the ending, from the creator to the creator. But what fuels the journey is our desires, and our desires are always to move on to the next step, to learn more, to be better, to have more understanding, to become a more conscious person. And this continues through the next density, and the density after that, and on into sixth density, the density of unity. And when negatively oriented entities, STS, or service to self entities, are ready to graduate fifth density negative, they have to enter into sixth density if they graduate with all of the positively oriented people, because they're is no longer a negatively oriented separate density. Fifth density is the last density that can hold negative entities, because of the fact that the negative path, the STS path, is the path of that which is not. The way you get to be service to self oriented is you start out by making a huge separation, an abyss really, between me and everybody else in the world. The center of the universe is me. That's the service to self attitude. I am the creator. I am the important one. And I will manipulate and control all others around me for my convenience, for my comfort, for the things that I need. And they are all pawns. They are not connected to me in any way. They are simply men on the board, you know, cannon fodder to be shot down if policy demands it. It is a very impersonal way of looking at other people. And we've all seen people that operate just like that. It's all about me, you know. And it's real hard for them to stretch to consider that there's anybody else in their world. Except somebody that they happen to want to be nice to, because it will do something for them. So you have these negative people. They're very used to manipulating other people. They walk the steps of light, and by golly, they've made it into sixth density. And they have to mix again with the hoi polloi that believe that all is one and that the thing to do is to be of service to other people. And they're going, oh, geez, this is not easy, you know. And they're reeling and they're trying to stay negative, but the sixth density light holds too much information for that. They can no longer even pretend that their consciousness is different from the consciousness of everybody else. It's so totally obvious that all are connected, that all are one, that eventually they have to give up the path of that which is not. They have to admit that there is a heart, and that that heart tells the truth, and that that truth is love. All of this is anathema to service to self individuals. Now, how we can understand it is pretty simple, because we've all known somebody that, you know, he didn't believe anything. He was a complete atheist. He laughed at religion, and then all of a sudden he was saved, and now he's the biggest convert on the block. He's trying to bring everybody to church with him. He's talking to people about the hereafter. He's had a sea change, and he just wants to share it. He's so excited. He's more of a Christian, more devout, more church-going, more committed than a lot of people that have been going to church every Sunday all their life out of habit. And, you know, you can translate that into other lifestyle changes, people that stop drinking and then are trying to tell everybody else about the danger of alcohol, or people that stop smoking and then are trying to wake other people up to the danger of smoking tobacco. So I think that this is the same kind of thing, where they become the most enthusiastic converts to service to others that you'd ever want to see, because it's very exciting to move forward. It's very exciting to get it and to move forward. And in order to move forward into the density of unity, they have to let go of the path of that which is not. They can't go any further until they make that big jump from service to self polarity to service to others, STS to STO. I would rather be on the path of that which is and stay on the service to others path throughout, because I think it's going to be an easier walk. But I think there are those that are drawn to the service to self path either because of, what shall I say? The seductive charm of service to self is that it's the path of rapid acquisition of power, influence, and money. And there's a more subtle kick to it, too. And I think for people that are easily bored, service to self appeals because it's a walk on the wild side. Anything is allowed. You can thieve, you can steal, you can gamble, you can do things to excess, you can hurt people. And it's all okay as long as it's for the good of the business. You know, everything is for the good of the business or for the good of your cause. And lying and cheating is okay. And you know, wow, all of a sudden everything opens up if you're a certain kind of person that's easily bored and just wants to play. So I think that those two things, the obvious pull for service to self is the acquisition of money, influence, and power. But the more subtle thing that drives people into service to self is that they certainly don't want to be those boring old goody-goodies, and they haven't really experienced the incredible joy that comes from resting in what is. And they think that they're going to get more kick out of the other walk. So all of that goes into some people choosing the service to self path. But to me, it's kind of a simple choice because I like the way I feel when I'm working in a service to others way. And it feels right to me. And yeah, there is right and wrong to me. I have a very ethical world. And I think that's something that is not anything to be ashamed of. We all need to figure out what our ethics are and what our rule of life is.
So for someone on the STO path, there certainly is right and wrong, and something that might be okay for a negatively oriented entity would be considered wrong for an STO entity in terms of losing polarity if they engage in such behaviors.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say that another interesting thing about this polarity is that even in the next density, even in fourth density, the density of love, it quickly becomes obvious because there's no veil. It's not necessary to fight each other and to fear that one side or the other is going to win, because it's just a matter of there are two sides to every question, and this is a big question, how to serve. And some have chosen one way, some have chosen another, and the ways are different enough that the paths are split. But in the beginning of fourth density, there is a war going on between those who consider themselves good, the white hats, and the negative entities who feel that they want to put out the light of positive people. And that fight will probably go on as long as there's third density to convince people that war is a good way to solve problems. Imagine once we get into fourth density and there are no third density people coming in, that won't happen because it's pretty obvious that war doesn't ever solve anything. You may get territory, but you don't win hearts. So that confusion about polarity goes on longer than this density. And it only winds down in the middle of sixth density. So there are these things that are very deep themes, very deep energies in our metaphysical universe.
Now, I remember something about the 4D negative entities being separated from the 4D positive once we go 4D. So how is this war continuing, or am I maybe not remembering correctly?
It's in the inner planes. It's not in the space-time planes. It's in the time-space continuum. It's sort of the war in heaven that is written about in the Bible with Michael, as the white Western magicians would call that entity, one of the archangels, leading the forces of good and forces of light with the sword of truth. And the fallen angel, Lucifer, with his army of demons rallying in the lake of fire and fighting back. It's sort of that scenario. And it wouldn't exist at all except in people's fantasies, except for the fact that some people feel that they need to join in. And when they're in between incarnations, they do so.
Okay, thank you, Carla. We have a question submitted from our chat room from Nega Nova. And I would like to remind everyone, we do have a chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. Please join us, and you can submit your questions there. Or you can call us at 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770, and press the 1 key. Nega Nova asks, is it possible to live and see the self as the one infinite creator and yet still remain positive without the desire to manipulate, etc.? Would this be against the law of one? Also, are we already in fourth density? I'm always a little confused about exactly how fourth density begins if we are already in it. Is there a moment in which it literally begins? And is it something we recognize as the beginning, or am I misunderstanding the concept? This is from Nega Nova.
Hello, Nega Nova. It is very good to feel your energy. I'll do the best I can with your question. Let's see. The first part, Monica, I didn't really understand. She was saying, is it okay not to manipulate others?
Yeah, is it possible to live and see the self as the one infinite creator and yet still remain positive without the desire to manipulate? Would this be against the law of one?
No, not at all. That's the whole point of the law of one, is not to bother anybody else, but just to do our own thing. And to do it without infringing on the free will of another soul. The simplest thing in the world is to see the self as the creator, as long as you see everybody else as the creator too, so that you realize your sphere of influence stops with your body's limits. You know, it doesn't go beyond your fingers, or certainly doesn't go beyond your mouth. You need to think about what you're going to say to somebody else, to make sure that you're not infringing on that person's free will or manipulating them or persuading them in some way, rather than just relating to them creator to creator. I wonder, is there anything that I'm missing here, Monica? Because it seems like it's a fairly straightforward question as it stands. And usually there are little trickers in that. But at any rate, what the second question? Would you read that to me again? Let's see. I'm not hearing Monica, so something's happened.
Uh oh, that was my fault. I had the mute button on. Sorry. Okay, that was bound to happen sooner or later. Okay. I was like, boy, why didn't she hear that? Okay. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, the first part of the question, did you hear me reread that? Or I guess we're past that part. Okay. The second part, are we already in fourth density? I'm always a little confused about how exactly fourth density begins. If we are already in it, is there a moment in which it literally begins, and is it something we recognize as the beginning, or am I misunderstanding the concept?
You're not misunderstanding the basic concept. There's third density, then there's fourth density, and so forth. What's very hard to wrap intellect around is that this is third density. And fourth density comes, and it comes to Earth, but it comes to fourth density Earth, which is not the same Earth as third density Earth. Just as second density is not the same as third density Earth, and first density Earth is not the same as second. They're nested together. And the reason that we can still see everything is that first density, second density, and third density are all taking place in space-time, as well as time-space. In fourth density, the energy changes from chemical to electrical and from mass to no mass. So instead of having big, bulky physical objects around that you have to manipulate, instead of working with machinery, you're working with light, you're working with thought. And so fourth density Earth is invisible to third density Earth, although from the fourth density perspective, they can see us moving around. They can see the animals and the trees and all of the plant life and the animal life. They can see the first density of all of the elements and the water and fire and air and earth. So we just can't see them. But we can feel the energy of that fourth density Earth. It's interpenetrating third density completely at this time. I believe that the answer to your question, very simply, is yes, we are now in fourth density. But there is also a designated time for fourth density to become the active density. And that is the winter solstice of 2012. Although this can be argued, and some people find it fascinating to do so, some people have worked the Mayan calendar differently and come up with a time in September of 2012 or August of 2012. Some people say, no, it's 2011. And some people even point to those of Ra saying, oh, around 30 years from now, it's going to be over and it's going to be fourth density. And they weren't very good with numbers, so they would certainly have not been accurate, or they wouldn't have claimed accuracy. They would have said, we think it's about that. But they were talking in 81, so 30 years from there would be 2011. So basically, the winter solstice of 2012 is sort of like Christmas. It's the time that we have given for the birth of Jesus for so many years that people basically believe that that's when Jesus was born. Well, it doesn't really matter if it's his real birthday or not. It's when we celebrate it. And I think that we can figure that we are basically in fourth density now. We don't have to wait a year and a day, and it's not going to be an event. It's not going to be something that you look and say, oh, wow, fourth density, everything's changed. We're still going to be on third density Earth. We have third density bodies. They're chemical. They're heavy. They simply can't handle the electrical energy of fourth density. It's sort of like, why don't I want to take my body with me? Well, it's wearing out for one thing, but for another thing, it's not going to be adequate to the task of getting me around in fourth density. So naturally, I want to move on. So I don't think that this is something that will be understood, because it is so unusual a concept to think of nested densities interpenetrating each other, all within the influence of Earth. People think that there's this one rock that we're on, and it's somehow magically going to change. Well, the rock isn't going to change. The rock is just going to be in another portion of space, a new portion of space with a different quality and density of light, and the people on it are going to change. And I think, you know, we've seen people change quite a bit in the last 30 years. I realized the other day that in January of 2012, it will have been 50 years, half a century, that I have been attending channeling meditations. They started in January of 1962 at the home of Hal and Joe Price here in Louisville, Kentucky. And so I have watched the spiritual landscape change for 50 years. And in that time, I have seen people awaken not as dramatically as the hippies awoke the world when I was young, but on a continuing basis, more and more people are waking up, and they are changing. So it's not that the Earth changes. The Earth receives the light that it receives, and it responds accordingly. And the planet itself is going to be in fourth density in the winter solstice of 2012. We will walk the steps of light to our graduation into fourth density when we die. I don't believe it's going to happen all at once at the winter solstice of 2012. And I don't believe we'll see any difference the day after the winter solstice, which is what, December 23rd, 2012, we'll get up and everything's going to look the same. Because we're still in third density. We still have these chemical bodies. We still can't see into fourth density. We will have to drop this physical body at the end of our incarnation when we've done all our learning and all our serving. And we're ready to move on. We've gotten everything out of this incarnation we possibly can, and I'm wringing mine out, man. I'm not leaving until I've absolutely worn it out. And then we will be able to have a much clearer view of how all this works. But this is what the readings say, that the densities interpenetrate, and the third density Earth is never going to be the same as fourth density Earth. It's just going to be an Earth which is populated more and more by wanderers who simply want to heal the planet before they leave it So they come back and they work with Mother Earth. They try to clean up the water. They try to clean up the air. They try to make restitution for the damage done to our beloved planet. And I think more and more that's who is going to be wanting to incarnate here. And after a while, there won't be anybody that wants to incarnate here because the planet will be healed. And then that energy will go away. And I think it'll go away for a long, long time. Their density Earth will not have human habitation. It'll all be fourth density. However, the Confederation has never said anything about whether the animals and the plant life can remain. And so I assume that under the stringencies of what the sun does to this environment over the next few million years, you know, there may well continue to be a second density presence on Earth, but not a third density presence, not for long, because there's no more third density light. So people will not be interested in incarnating here because there's no learning that they can do here. It's a matter of density, the planet itself. For Earth. And the matter that is still remaining is not very important. The only reason that it has importance is if people will think, gosh, by that date, you know, if it should happen that we all go at once on that date, I want to be ready. And in that case, maybe it has some use to think that way, because then you make that choice and you decide, okay, I'm going to serve others. I'm going to build up some polarity here and I'm going to graduate.
Well, if there's going to be a transition and the 3D light is waning, so eventually cannot support 3D life anymore, are you able to speculate as to how the rest of the humans will be leaving? Or do you think there'll be just increased sterility? Or do you have any idea how that might happen?
I do not. I really do not have a clue as to how that's going to happen. I just figure that if souls do not want to incarnate, there will not be babies, you know?
Yeah, well, that's simple, I guess. Okay, I'm going to move on to our next question, which is from Ashim from the forum. And Ashim would like to know if you're aware of any connection between Kuo and Quetzalcoatl.
I'm not aware of any, although they certainly both begin with the same unusual letter, Q. Quetzalcoatl is a figure from the Mayan Indian mythological structure, whereas Kuo has an energy that is extraterrestrial. So I sincerely doubt that there is any more connection between Quetzalcoatl and Kuo than there is between the god Ra, popularized on the TV show Stargate, inaccurately popularized, but nevertheless popularized as a fairly negative entity, and the extraterrestrials that are called Ra. Excuse me.
While we're waiting for Carla to get back, I just want to remind everyone that you are listening to In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Reichert, and you are welcome to call us live if you have a question you'd like to ask Carla on the air. Call 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770, and press the 1 key to join the show.
Can you hear me, Monica?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You were gone for a little bit there.
Okay.
I thought maybe you were sneezing or something.
I was trying to just...
Okay. Okay, now you just went out again, Carla. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You kind of faded out again. Okay, so I guess if you were complete on that about Quetzalcoatl, I'll move on to the next question. Is from Rama. The question is, given that Carla does not have a particularly mathematical mind, a suitable question may be, how is the relation between two people maximized beyond the two individual people making the call separately? What other factors allow for this doubling effect? What factors in this circumstance allow for the whole to be greater than the sum of the parts? This is from Rama.
Hey, Rama. Thanks for the question. In order to understand how doubling works, how doubling the call by having two people making the same call, you have to understand how a generator or something that develops electricity or light works. The more you load the coil, the more coils you hook together, the bigger the generator. The more people you hook together that have precisely the same intention, the more power you have, the bigger the lighthouse effect. The thing that makes people most effective in joining in work together and collaborating for the light is to be sure that you have a pure intention and that that intention is the same intention as the people with whom you're trying to collaborate to make a bigger light. Everybody wants to serve. We all want to help. But there is the matter of focus. And a lot of spiritual maturity has to do with going from place where you say, oh, I just love that good energy and I want to do that. And you do it for a day. But the next day you get up and you're on something else. You get to a point in life where you start persisting. You start steadying down because you see what's truly important to you. And at that point, you're more capable of maintaining a focus. And with the discipline of your personality, you have the ability to focus your thoughts and to hone your desire so that you become very passionate in a very deep way about the things that you care about. And you are able to put all of yourself into an effort that lasts not just a day, not just a month or a year, but the rest of the incarnation. And it's at that level of, this is what my life is about, this is what my service is about, I am going to take care of this day by day for the rest of my life because this is the way I want to live. When you get to that point, you have awakened your magical personality. And then you simply need to find other people with pure intentions that have the same intention in order to create the maximum doubling effect. Does that make sense, Monica?
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay.
I don't have anything to add to that or ask regarding that, so I'm going to move to the next question, which may be our last question, or we may have room for one more afterwards, possibly. This is from 3D Sunset, submitted on the Bring Forth forum. And 3D Sunset asks, is the exploration of the synergies between Dewey E. Larson's reciprocal system of theory and the Law of One beneficial to the spiritual advancement of those of us exploring it, or is it still, as Ra once indicated, interesting but unimportant?
Well, that's a loaded question because of the fact that not everybody has the same personality, not everybody has the same gifts. There are some people that find physics a doorway into mysticism. to those people, I would say that it would be definitely a spiritual practice to investigate the reciprocal system of theory, and even maybe to see what doors it opens in terms of seeking for that holy grail of unified field theory in such a way as to be able to prove scientifically that all things are one. Now, physics is moving in that direction, so I think it would be a perfectly valid thing to do to investigate the possibilities of, shall we say, reciprocity between the reciprocal system and the law of one. Dewey Larson thought that the law of one was very interesting work, and his last book was a book on his take on humanity and what humanity's purpose was here and what we were doing here. And a lot of the things that he said fit in perfectly with the law of one. So for those people to whom mathematics speaks, who get excited about mathematics, and I know people who do, so that actually does happen. I would say that it's very valuable. For those who are not particularly gifted mathematically, it is undoubtedly so that there are other ways to get from the head to the heart than through sacred geometry or mathematics or physics. So I would say that the reciprocal system is one avenue that would be fruitful for people if they have the right personality.
Being that Don was very scientific and asked a lot of scientific and technical questions throughout the Law of One sessions, this question, I mean, would you say that applies to a lot of the other information offered by Ra as well, much of which was in answer to Don's questions? This has come up on the forum. There's been some discussion about, gosh, there's so much deep technical information here. Some of the members really like to explore the technical information, while others say, gosh, why are you even talking about that stuff? We just need to love, open your heart. That's all that matters. And wouldn't you say there's room for both approaches?
There has to be room for both, because you have both kinds of people. You've got your left brain people who are really going to be trying to make it linear and logical, and you know, and then you've got right brain people who are artistic and creative and don't want to be tied down to the linear and the logical. They want to fly. They want to fly free of all that. So it's a difference in personality. It's not a deep difference. It's a shallow difference, really. And underneath both the right brain and the left brain, there's the silence. And in the silence is the real power, the real information, the real energy of consciousness. And that consciousness is a consciousness of love. So it's not a silence that is neutral. It is a silence that is full to bursting with the energy of the unconditional love of the one creator. I've experienced it many, many times, and I've experienced it in conversations with other people. I've experienced it by myself in meditation. I've experienced it in so many different ways, even in third density here in the middle of life, you know, as we know it. You get that love just pouring through sometimes like sunshine, and the conversation is illuminated, even if it's not about anything very important, because it's so invested with the love of the people involved in the conversation. And a lot of times, you know, when people get together here at L&L, there is this incredible energy that builds up, because all of a sudden you've got a dozen people or three dozen people, however many people come to an event, that have been dying to talk about this stuff but have nobody to talk about it with. And all of a sudden they're in the presence of people with whom they can talk about pretty much anything that they please, because they are brought together through the filter of the Law of One. So the people that show up here are very compatible with each other, and it's like old home week, even if it's not called homecoming. And it's just this wonderful explosion of good feelings and love. And you see that at the homecomings, you see that difference in all walks of life, because there are those that are logical and linear, and then there are those that are artistic and insightful, and really never the twain shall meet. The two don't work the same. You know, the two brains, the two sides of the brain don't work the same. So it's a matter of coming together through the meditation that underlies our speech, our talking, our thinking processes, and joining with each other at the level of consciousness. And it's perfectly delightful to do this. It doesn't matter that the person's a scientist or a technical person or an artist or a performer. Everything comes together in the silence. So I think that that really is how we can experience our unity in the strongest possible way.
Okay, I think we've got about 6 or 7 minutes left, and we have time for just one more question. And Nega Nova has submitted another question in the chat room. I have a question that has to do with the lighthouse effect, that being groups of people who get together to seek together or unite intention in something. My question then is, does the location of all members in the group matter? For example, if there are 10 people in the group, but 5 are in one city and the other 5 in another, would the intensity of energy and intention be stronger if all members were in the same room at the same time? Or is location meaningless?
Location is not meaningless for events of this nature, but it helps. Let me give you an example. In 1974, Andre Fujard, who was a friend of Don's, called everybody together. No, it was 77, excuse me. We met in 74. In 77, he called us up to New York, to his home. And he wanted us to be part of something called a mind link, because he'd gotten information from channels that he was listening to at the time, that the Confederation was pretty disgusted with Earth, and they were thinking of just letting it happen. They just didn't think that we could work together. So Pujars decided that we needed to show them that we could work together. So he called all the psychics that he knew. Some were kids, some were older. I was in my 30s at the time. Don was in his 40s. There were people there as old as 80 and as young as 16. And there were about 36 of us. And we set up a schedule for meditations twice a day, once in the morning and once in the afternoon. And for a half hour, we would sit in we sat in concentric circles. The people that perceived themselves as being most important felt that they should sit in the inner circle. There was some ego play here. Then there was a second circle for those that were not quite as important. And then there was the circle with most of the kids and Don and me, because we wanted to sit in the outer circle. And we meditated twice a day for 3 weeks. And in that time, we all had a unified vision. We all experienced the same thing, going on board a UFO and being given instructions of various kinds. And it was very interesting that no matter how much the egos flashed and played, this work got done, because everything had to be chewed through and worked out, because we were in each other's faces. We had to live together. We had to cook. We had to, you know, take care of the business of living together during that time. And it was an intense time. Now, if we all had gotten on the computer and hooked up via Skype or a chat room or something like that, we would have been able to raise a lot of energy, but we wouldn't have come through the fire of having to live with each other in real time, in third density, on planet Earth as we know it. it sort of intensifies and focuses a group to be physically in each other's presence. I think that it's an excellent idea to form groups on the internet and to do work that you want to collaborate on, whether it's holding the light or whether it's some particular kind of service, without ever being in each other's presence. I think that's a great idea, but I don't think that you'll ever get the pitch of intensity working virtually that you will get if you have to hoik yourself up out of your chair, go travel somewhere, and do the thing that you came to do with the people who also are displaced from home and hearth because they also wanted to do this thing. So you get a bunch of people who want to serve the light, and they come to one place. There's already an added intensity because of the fact that they're in each other's presence. They have the opportunity to talk to each other, to stay up late, to blow the night just being excited about talking about these things. And there's an energy that builds up when you're physically together that I've not experienced being able to produce any other way. And I think it's just the nature of the human animal that when we're together, we form a pack. We form a clan. And there is energy in that clan because we are interrupting each other's auras in the same physical place. And we are blending our energies in a unique way. So while it's good to work over the internet and form groups that aren't all in one place to do good works together, and I'm sure lots of good work gets done that way, I think the best focus groups of all are those that are in each other's presence.
And that wraps it up for tonight. Carla, we are out of time. Did you have any last-minute, very brief announcements that you wanted to make?
No, just to thank everybody again for listening in and telling you all how much I love you and how much I look forward to being with you again.
Okay. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Records. I'm your host, Monica Liel. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, that's bring the number 4, th.org, which is LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. You can submit a question for Carla before the next show by visiting the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions, or submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. Please visit our sponsor, Alan Feibelman, at Water Nurtures Life for information regarding powerful crystalline therapeutic grade water. That's waternurtureslife.com. Carla will be having surgery on February 28th, so please continue to hold her in your prayers. We will have one more show next week on the 25th, and then we'll be taking a break for just a few weeks, might be a couple of weeks, might be several weeks, depending on her recovery, but I hear she's a very quick, rapid recoverer, so we anticipate we'll be back very soon, and thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.